also want to take a moment, obviously, to wish a happy Mother's Day to all our mothers that are with us. And so, woohoo, to all the moms. So we're so incredibly grateful for you. And I hope that today that you are celebrated well. I hope that you are honored. I hope that you are loved well today. And we are just so incredibly glad that you're here. And we're so incredibly glad that you are a part of our community. And so we also recognize that today is a hard day for a lot of people to walk into church for a variety of different reasons. And it triggers things in us, makes people feel isolated. And so if that's you, if that's your story, I just want you to know that you're loved here as well. And that you and your story, you belong here, and that we love you, and we're so glad that you're a part of our community. And so last week, Tirza kicked off a new teaching series that we're going to be in for the next few weeks called Words for Our Words. And if you missed what she taught through last week, I'd highly encourage you to go back and listen to it, not only because she did a great job walking us through it, but it also sets up the series as a whole really well. And it's anchored in this idea that language is complex, and that over time, language evolves, and definitions of words evolve. And year after year, what we see is that hundreds of words get added to our dictionary and to our vocabulary. And if we're not paying attention to the context of how and when certain words are used, we can end up bringing a lot of assumptions to the table when it comes to words and how words are used, which lead to then lots of misunderstandings. And so last week, Tirza started us off by looking at the word repentance. And this week, what I want to do is I want to look at the word peace. Because it's interesting, it's one of those words that when you hear it from someone else, it can mean all sorts of different things. And we're like, okay, what do you exactly mean when you talk about peace? Or it's this word when we find ourselves using it, where it's like, okay, what do I actually mean when I say peace? Because it has lots of different nuances to it, lots of different ideas and definitions to it. And because when most of us, when we think of peace, it feels rather ethereal. It can be this tough idea for us to get handles on, because in one sense, it comes off rather naive. Like when you hear a pageant contestant get asked, you know, what their one wish is for, and they say something like, well, I'd really like to see world peace happen in my lifetime. And there's a part of us, especially here in the South, that's like, oh, honey, bless your heart. You know, that's that's cute and all. But yeah, it just comes off rather naive. It comes off like this type of pat answer that no one really knows what that means. And for others of us, when we hear people talking about this idea of inner peace, it's like, okay, that sounds nice, but it's just something that we find rather elusive. And many of us are like, I just don't know how to quite achieve this inner peace you're talking about unless I'm willing to go live on a mountainside and meditate somewhere for the rest of my life. Like, I don't know how to get what you're talking about when you say this inner peace. And it's just this elusive thing that we can't grasp. And then for others of us, when we think about peace, we think of it as the absence of war between nations. Like, nations are no longer at war. Or for some of us, it's just much closer to home, because we just think about that we want the battles to stop in our own household, where peace to us usually means that no one's throwing anything, right? No one's screaming, no one's slamming doors. There's these tensions that get eased. And that's what we think of when we think of peace. And in all these different types of ways that we think about peace in 2019 here in America, they all pretty much boil down to this absence of conflict, where peace in our mind is when conflict goes away. When it goes away between nations, when it goes away between family and friends, when it goes away even within ourselves. We have this conflict within ourselves, and when that goes away, we think, in one of those scenarios, that's when we finally get peace. But it's interesting, because in the scriptures, and when Jesus talks about peace, the idea of peace was much broader than that. But without context, we just assume, you know what, I'm sure peace means the same thing then as it does today, a couple thousand years later. But it's interesting, because there's a whole different kind of core idea that's built around this idea of peace. Now, the word in Hebrew that we find in the Bible that gets translated into English as peace is the word shalom. Now, some of you have probably heard that word before, and maybe in some different ways or contexts, but the Hebrew word that gets translated into English as peace is shalom. And while the word shalom certainly contains this idea of the absence of conflict, it carries with it a much larger and broader foundational idea. For example, in the Hebrew context, shalom would refer to a stone that where it was in this perfect whole shape, where there would be no cracks at all in the stone. It was perfect, it was whole, no cracks in it. Or shalom would refer to a completed stone wall, where there weren't any gaps in the wall, where there weren't any missing bricks or places in the wall where it wasn't all put together, that the complete wall all the stones, they were completed. It was all together. Look at this other example from the ancient letter of Job that we find in the scriptures. It says, you will know that your tent is shalom. You will take stock of your property and find nothing missing. Now, the English translators translate it there as secure because, again, it has all sorts of different nuances and layers to it. But the idea here is that you would count your sheep, count your animals, and you would find that the herd, the barn, the tent is complete. You would find that nothing is missing. It's not lacking in any way. Or look at this in the book of Exodus, chapter 22. It says, if the stolen animal is found alive in his possession, whether ox or a donkey or sheep, he must shalom double. And the idea that English translators there do, that it must be paid back double, that if a stolen animal is found in your possession, you've got to pay it back. The idea here is you must take what's been missing. If something is found to be missing, your job is to restore it to wholeness, to make it whole. Or another book, 1 Kings, says 3 times a year, Solomon sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings on the altar he had built for the Lord, burning incense before the Lord along with them. And so shalom the temple obligations. And translators there put the word fulfilled today in English. He fulfilled the temple obligations. He completed what was required of the temple. He brought shalom to it by completing it, by fulfilling all the obligations that were there as a part of the temple. Or even in these wisdom sayings of Proverbs, it says, when a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies shalom with him. Live at peace with him. It's this idea that when you reconcile a broken relationship, when you heal a broken relationship of any kind, you're bringing shalom to it. We see this throughout the Bible with rival kings and nations. When shalom came, it wasn't that they simply stopped fighting. That the picture of shalom was that when they also started to work together for each other's benefit. Now, not surprisingly, that didn't happen very often with these nation and rival kings, but that was the picture, that was the goal. It was to move toward shalom. And so this core idea in the scriptures around peace is that life is complex and it's full of moving parts and relationships and environments and situations. And when any of the pieces get out of alignment or when any of the pieces start to be missing, shalom breaks down. Therefore, the writers in the scriptures are constantly coming back to this notion that we see in the songwriters of Psalms where it says, turn from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it. Seek shalom and pursue it. And so when we look at this bigger picture of shalom, it's the presence of wholeness, the presence of health, harmony, where things are as they are intended to be. And so what does that look like? Right? What does that look like for you and I to pursue peace? Because it has all these different nuances to it, all these various dimensions to it. It includes shalom with ourselves, right? Shalom with yourself. It's when you're comfortable in your own skin. And when you and I aren't comfortable in our own skin, we recognize that there's work to do, that there's work that you and I have to do. And maybe that's inviting a therapist to come alongside of us, or a life coach, or a mentor, or a pastor, or someone who can help us do the work that we need to do inside of us to move us toward peace. Because there's this shalom that we want to have within ourselves. Shalom also includes this shalom with others, where you do the necessary work. You do as much as you can to live at peace with the people around you. Now, granted, that's not always possible, right? Because peace is a two-way street. But what we're invited to do and what we're commanded to do is that you and I are to do as much as we can do to bring peace. We're called to do everything in our power to bring peace, to bring shalom to our relationship with others. Even though at times, again, because peace is a two-way street, someone might not be willing to do their part, but we need to do everything that we can do to bring shalom to our relationships with others. There's shalom with God. There's shalom with our Creator. There's shalom with our past, where we can look at our life and we can look at what we've gone through and experienced up to this point. We can look at who we are and be reconciled with it, reconciled to how things are. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to be okay with everything that's happened in our past. Does it mean that everything that happened in our past is good or to acknowledge that? It just means that we're willing to work through the process, that we're willing to make amends, that we are willing to move toward shalom. And then there's shalom with the earth. Shalom with the soil, with the ocean, with the air, with our environment. It's interesting, but that the second command in all of the scriptures is about being in proper relationship for caring for and stewarding the earth. And yet, people today in the conversation and how it exists today around the environment is that being compelled to care for the earth is some type of progressive issue. And if what we want to call progressive is being a command that's thousands of years old, then okay. But when we think about it that way, it's not this progressive new idea. The reality is that we're commanded from the very beginning to learn to steward the earth and to bring shalom to it. And the reality is we have some serious earth care issues. And we've done damage to creation, and we haven't taken good care of the soil and the oceans and the air. And so we don't have shalom with the earth. And in all of these, what you'll notice is that shalom, the idea of shalom, of peace, it has this active, dynamic sense to it. That shalom and peace is about what are you and I going to do with our energy? What are we going to do with our energy? What's our contribution going to be to advance shalom in the world? Where is something missing in the world? Where is something out of alignment? Where is something that is broken or cracked or fractured in our culture, in our relationships, in our societal systems, in our neighborhood, in ourselves? Where is something cracked and broken, and what are you and I going to do with our energy to bring shalom to it, to bring wholeness to it, health, to restore it, to bring repair to it? What are you and I going to do with our energy? That's the question. You know, some of you, you're wired the way that you are to create with your words, to create with music, to create with wood, with fabric. And you get to wrestle with how can you use your energy and your gifts to bring more shalom into the places where you find yourself. Some of you, you're wired for business where you can arrange and organize and you can create systems and infrastructure and you can make certain products available that align with God's heart to bring more shalom to the earth. Some of you, you can do this with your families. Some of you have this unique ability to enter into a loved one's frustration, to enter into their pain. Maybe it's a child, maybe it's a teenager, maybe it's a spouse. And you have this ability to make sure that they feel heard and understood and loved, and where they feel isolation, you bring your presence and you help bring shalom to those fractures and places of brokenness. Some of you, you have a heart for people where you look at different groups of people and you see that they're fractured and you have this heart to bring them together. Others of you have this deep longing and this sense in the world that to make sense of it, to make order of the world. And so through research and science and exploration, you use your energy to bring more peace, to bring shalom to where it's needed in a broken world. Some of you have this recurring sense inside of you where your heart beats, it's to empower other people. Where you look around and you're like, you know what? Some people don't have what they need and I want to help. There's people out there that don't have enough food. They don't have enough water. They don't have enough medicine. They don't have literacy. And so you get to wrestle with the question, what gets me excited? What is it that gets me excited? And if this is what gets me excited, how can I figure out how to help bring shalom there? What are you and I going to do with our energy to bring shalom? Because friends, that's what peace is about. It is about this active, dynamic thing that we bring, that we do. This isn't the absence of something. This is much more about what are we bringing. There's a fascinating story that took place in a Nazi prison camp called Bergen-Belsen, where in 1945, there was a Lieutenant Colonel Gowen who led a group of British soldiers in to help liberate this Nazi prison camp. And while he was there in his course of time of liberating the camp, he had a diary with him and he wrote his reflections and an account of the dehumanization that he encountered while he was there. And I want you to listen to some of what he wrote in his diary. He wrote this: "I can give no adequate description of the horror camp in which my men and myself were to spend the next month of our lives. It was just a barren wilderness, as bare as a chicken run. Corpses lay everywhere, some in huge piles. Sometimes they lay singly or in pairs where they had fallen. It took a little time to get used to seeing men, women, and children collapse as you walked by them and to restrain oneself from going to their assistance. One had to get used early to the idea that the individual just did not count. One knew that 500 a day were dying, and that 500 a day were going on dying for weeks before anything we could do would have the slightest effect. And then he goes on and he describes in gruesome detail, really, children dying and women drowning and men eating worms, all these horrific details of these conditions that they faced on a daily basis. But then he concludes in this journal entry by writing this. He says, "It was shortly after the British Red Cross arrived, though it may have been no connection, that a very large quantity of lipstick arrived. This is not at all what we men wanted. We were screaming for hundreds and thousands of other things, and I don't know who asked for lipstick. I wish so much that I could discover who did it. It was the action of genius, sheer, unadulterated brilliance. I believe nothing did more for these internees than the lipstick. Women lay in bed with no sheets and no nightie, but with scarlet red lips. You saw them wandering about with nothing but a blanket over their shoulders, but with scarlet red lips. I saw a woman dead on the postmortem table, and clutched in her hand was a piece of lipstick. At last, someone had done something to make them individuals again. They were someone, no longer merely the number tattooed on the arm. At last, they could take an interest in their appearance. That lipstick started to give them back their humanity." And the thing is, there are so many places in our world and in our culture where people are being robbed of their humanity. They're being robbed of their dignity. They're being robbed of the precious worth and value they have as a human being, as a child of God. And what you and I get invited to figure out is, how do we go around with whatever lipstick we can to help give people back their humanity? To help people get back this sense that they are loved and known and cared for by their Creator. We get to step into the question of, what are we, each of us individually and collectively, going to do with our energy to bring shalom? Because it's crucial how you and I decide to spend our energy. And sometimes it becomes really easy to fall into the cynical, bitter, and complaining posture toward the world. And what ends up happening is we end up squandering precious energy with our complaining and with our bitterness and with our cynicism that could contribute to ongoing shalom in the world, that could contribute to bringing health and restoration and harmony to where there's brokenness in the world. Jesus says this in his famous Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons and daughters of God." Now, there's a distinction that I want you to notice there, and it says it's peacemakers, not peacekeepers. And that's important. If any of you have read or seen The Hunger Games, remember the troops that are brought in by the Capitol to keep everyone in line, to use whatever means to do so? They're called peacekeepers. And we can often get these two ideas confused, of peacekeeping and peacemaking, because we can do this in our homes, we can do it at work, we can do it at school, where we just try to keep peace. And when we're just focused on trying to keep the peace, we'll do whatever we can to just try to keep the peace. So we'll lie, we'll avoid, we'll enable destructive behavior, we'll ignore, we'll spend money in all sorts of unwise ways, we'll intimidate, all in this effort to just say, okay, can we just keep the peace? What do I have to do to just keep the peace? But again, simply compliance or quiet or lack of conflict, that's not peace. It's not shalom. When it comes to shalom, the means to the end matter. How we are getting to peace matters. And the same is true on a cultural level, on a national or global level, where the goal can't ever become to just keep peace. Because if that's the goal, if that becomes the goal, it becomes very easy to justify all sorts of brutal and violent actions. It becomes about who can shame or threaten better to shut the other side up. We all read about this in history class growing up, the Pax Romana, right? The Peace of Rome, where peace was kept by, if you didn't submit to the Roman army when they came to conquer your land, then they killed you. And this is what they called peace. They formed peace by threatening, by killing, by intimidating. And so they kept peace by, if you don't agree with us, then we kill you. But friends, as people pursuing the way of Jesus, we're not invited to be peacekeepers. We're not commanded to be peacekeepers. We're invited and commanded to be peacemakers, shalom bringers that contribute to the healing and restoration of the world and of people wherever we find it. Where we find it in our home, in our neighborhood, in our offices, in school, in our social media outlets, in public and in private. We are commanded to be peacemakers. But let me be clear about something. I don't want us to ever mistake peacemaking for always being quiet or reserved or subdued. Because, you know, some of us, we have this passion inside of us and we feel like, well, if I need to be a part of peace in the world and bringing peace in the world, then I need to just step back and I just need to be quiet and reserved and all these kinds of things. But I love how one author, Oshita Moore, she puts it this way. And I love what she says. She goes, peace can be fierce at times. And it has to be because violence and discord and injustice won't go down without a fight. We need people with passion to enter into the work of peacemaking. That discord and violence and injustice won't go down without a fight. And so we need people with passion to enter into the work of shalom making, of peacemaking. And so what are you and I going to do? That's the question. What are we going to do to bring shalom in our typical, normal, relational, task-oriented moments of each day? And then with our collective energy, with our strategic creativity and resources, we get to wrestle with what does it look like to be a peacemaker in this moment, right now, in this place in my life? What does it look like for me to bring shalom? For the last 25 years or so, whenever I write a note or a letter or an email, or even when I send out the newsletter that goes out via email here, usually on Friday mornings, most often I sign it with the phrase grace and peace. I've just done this for about 25 years or so, where that's typically how I sign off on things, grace and peace. And it's this phrase that we find in 13 different letters in the New Testament over and over again, where it's given as a greeting or a salutation, where it's grace and peace. And what grace does is grace serves as a reminder for us of this gift that we receive. That we need to be reminded of a gift that we receive. And peace is about what are we going to do to help bring and contribute shalom to our world. And it's this circular pattern that we get invited to live into. That's why I often remind myself of it and I want to remind others of it. This circular pattern of grace and peace. Of grace and peace. Where it's important that we get invited into moments and seasons when we pause and when we stop, we let ourselves be still and we Sabbath. We let ourselves be quiet so we can rediscover that our worth and value doesn't come from what we produce. It doesn't come from what we make, titles that we have. Where we can be reminded that God gives us grace and forgiveness and redemption and love and worth and value exactly as we are, that it's nothing that you and I can earn, that it is a free gift given to all. And we need to be reminded of that. And we need to have still, quiet moments where we can be reminded of that. And then as we do, as we sit in that, and we let ourselves embrace that, what happens is it can start to do something in us. When we become aware that we're loved exactly as we are, when we become aware that we're a child of God, what happens over time is that gratitude starts to well up in us. And we start to wonder then, okay, well then how can I respond? How can I serve? How can I contribute my energy? How can I come alongside others? How can I hand lipstick to this person or to that person? And when that starts to well up in us, we start to then say, okay, well, how can I take action then? And you become motivated with a cause or with a mission. And we're like, okay, if we could just gather a few more people in this, or if we could just add a few more resources to this, if we could provide a little bit more structure and organization, then we could help more kids, then we could help more people feel loved and included and be told of their worth and of their value. We could restore more wholeness in areas where it's broken and when it's fractured in homes and in schools and in culture and society. What if we just figure out a way to add just a little bit more structure and organization to it? Because we got stuff to do and we've got to go do it. But if we're not careful, as we get on this process of bringing shalom and being active in this active dynamic sense, what can happen then is we start to get caught up in finding our worth and our value in what we accomplish. We start to get caught up in finding our success being the thing that defines us. And we start to care way too much about what other people think about us and our reputation, what others, this person says about us or that person says about us. And when we do that, when we find ourselves being judged on our own worth and value by what we've done and what we've accomplished and the good things we've done here and the good things that we've done there, we can lose this deep sense that we are loved and valued by God before we actually do anything. And when we get in that space, we have to return to stillness. We have to return to quiet and to rest so we can be reminded where our worth actually comes from. But then once again, if we find ourselves staying there too long, we get complacent and we stop participating and we miss out on the joy of partnering with God and the healing and the restoration and resurrection of all things. Because you see, sometimes we're in the place where we need to sit and do nothing. And we need to be reminded that there's nothing we can do to make God love us more, and there's nothing we can do to make God love us less. And then there's other times when we need to roll up our sleeves and we need to get dirty and we need to jump in and enter into the difficulty, into the fractures, into the frustration, and we got to get to work. Because there's grace and then there's peace. There's the grace that we receive, and then there's the way that we pursue the ongoing shalom in the world. There's grace and there's peace. And we have to come back to that over and over again. There's grace and there's peace. So here's how I'd like us to wrap up today. I'm going to invite Stephen out to play a little bit for us. And I want to walk us through just kind of some guided time of reflection, maybe prayer, because what I don't know is that we're going to walk out of this room here in a few minutes and what our day is going to be like. And it might be really tough to just grab some moments of stillness and quiet and be reminded of some things that we need to be reminded of. And it can be really difficult to pause in the middle of the day and to go, okay, God, what are you inviting me into? How can I participate in shalom? And what does that look like for me? And so I want to make sure that we can take advantage of some space and some quiet and some stillness to do exactly that. So let's take a few moments to reflect and to pray together. God, I pray that you would quiet our hearts and you would help still our minds. Where there's all sorts of task-oriented lists that are run through our brains maybe right now. There's worries, concerns, fears, regrets, all sorts of stuff flooding through our mind. God, could you help us quiet for just a few moments to be still? And God, could you remind us in that quiet, in whatever way makes most sense to our brains and to how we're wired and to how we understand, could you lovingly gently remind us that we're loved and that we matter and that we belong. God, would you bring to mind maybe people in our life that maybe are lonely, that are afraid, that are hurting, that are scared, that are wounded, that feel isolated? Would you bring a specific person in mind to us? And would you help bring to mind, what's one way that I can step in? What's one way I can help bring peace, to help bring shalom, to help bring restoration to what's been cracked and fractured and hurt and broken, whether that's a phone call, whether that's an email, whether that's a showing up at someone's house, whether that's a hug, whether that's a meal. God, would you just give us one way for this specific person that we can help be peacemakers? God, could you help us to reflect just on our day-to-day, on the day-to-day task that we find ourselves living day in and day out? Help us not to get caught up or just dismiss this, that being a peacemaker is about some grand gesture, some grand event, some great cause, but that it's most often found in just the day-to-day as we do laundry and as we do yard work, as we provide people with a helpful service and a 9-to-5 job. God, could you help us see with renewed eyes how what we do day in and day out can contribute to shalom in the world? Can help bring order and wholeness and harmony and restoration. Could you help us see how the things that we do each and every single day can be a part of this ongoing vision of yours for us? And then God, can you help us see who we can be a part of restoring dignity and value to? God, that this isn't about saying, oh, that's someone else's job. That's a job for pastors, or that's a job for therapists, or for nonprofits, or for teachers, or for schools. But God, help us to embrace that this is all of our jobs. This is what we're all commanded to do, to figure out how to bring peace, to bring shalom, and to bring dignity and value to others. And so, God, can you bring to mind maybe a person or some people that in our lives that we need to be a part of helping restore dignity and value and worth to? God, help us to figure out what it means to live in this grace and peace.